Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All righty, folks. Michael Heck joins us, president and CEO of GNO Inc. Michael, welcome to the show.
Newell, thank you so much. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Michael, I want to say thank you so much to GNO Inc. for keeping everybody abreast of what's going on with the CARES Act, the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, which is going to be vital to the reestablishment of our business community here in the city of New Orleans. And I know you've been anxiously awaiting the adoption of some of these rules relative to what's coming down. Do we have any current information to offer?
Well, if you're talking specifically about the Paycheck Protection Program, the basics that people need to know is that it's going to be administered by your local bank. So the first thing you want to do is go talk to your local bank and see if they're going to be participating. Then they can start giving you some of the paperwork that you're going to need to fill it out. But it's meant to be really a fairly light program. I'll run through some of the basics, Newell, if it makes sense. It's
absolutely
the facts that people need. So the first is that there's a broad eligibility, everything from self-employed, gig economy people to sole proprietors to S-Corps and C-Corps, as well as 501c3s can participate up to 500 jobs. The maximum that you can apply for is basically going to be 2.5 times an average month gross payroll. So what that means, Newell, is that you take your salaries, you take your group health benefits, you take your retirement benefits, you take your vacation sick leave, put that all together, whatever that burn rate is for your organization for 2.5 months, that's what you can apply for. That's the maximum amount. But then what you can use it on is actually broader. So you're basing your amount on your gross payroll, but you can actually use it on payroll again, but you can also use it on your mortgage payments or your rent payments. You can use it on your utilities, I think broadly defined, I think including like phone and internet, and you can actually use it on debt that you've already incurred. And then the final part of this that people want to understand is the forgivable portion. The way that's going to work is that 8 weeks of your payroll, rent, utilities, interest on debt, basically 8 weeks of your operating costs can be forgiven. It'll get turned into a grant. And any of the remaining portion that's not forgiven is a 10-year loan at a gentle 4% interest rate.
So obviously they crafted that to try and help both short term and to extend these payments out long term and at a generous rate, quite frankly. It would be hard to go get a working capital loan at that rate right now.
That's right. And I think what businesses are going to have to now try to balance, and I was having a conversation with a restaurant owner about this, is the intention of this program from the government is to keep people employed and keep doors open of businesses. But on the other hand, the businesses are saying we have to make sure that when we have our employees back and our doors are open, that they're going to actually be customers. And so there's going to be a balance that businesses are going to be trying to find between keeping their doors open now and keeping fully staffed up versus preserving the cash, even at the expense of it being forgivable and ensuring that they're going to be in it for the long haul because, you know, we don't know, Newell, this could be something that hopefully is just another 3 to 4 weeks, but, you know, some estimates are that it could go significantly longer. So there is going to be this tension or this balance that people are trying to find between spending the money today to retain their staff, which you and I know all business owners want to do. They feel a practical and a strong moral responsibility. First is making sure they've got enough cash on hand to be there on the other side, knowing that once they get to the other side and the economy cranks back up, eventually there's going to be a whole lot of pent-up demand there.
Yeah. You know, there's two uncertainties here, Michael. One, obviously, the uncertainty of the duration of this pandemic. And some indicators, Governor Ralph Northam in Virginia is telling people that they're going to be staying at home in Virginia until June. So we have one governor who's already broke out of the pack, so to speak, and is saying that this thing is going to go longer than what we expected. And then in the interim, the duration of the period of time that it's going to take to actually get this relief, do we have any indication how quickly this process could possibly be moving through this SBA Paycheck Protection Program?
Yeah, so I guess two separate issues. I'll take the second one first. Mnuchin and the SBA are saying they want to have money out on the streets by the end of this week. Now, I applaud that goal. I don't quite understand. Right.
You got to love them.
So let's just say that the timetable to start getting money out is aggressive. And so that's good news. So that means that it's a matter of, you know, over the next couple of weeks, it's not going to be a matter of months that the money's going to start flowing. And then other monies are going to start coming in, including the checks for individuals, $1,200 for individuals, $500 for kids. And enhanced on insurance and so forth, as well as the $450 billion plus for larger companies, up to 10,000 individuals. So the money's going to start flowing. But let's get to the second question that you raised, which is how long this is going to go and when we're going to be able to get back to work. And whereas Northam might have said June, you've got some governors like Cuomo in New York, who, even though he's in the midst of a health crisis in New York City, is starting to say, you know, maybe we have to start letting people who are immune because they've already, you know, gotten the disease, or those who are essential workers, or those we can put back to work safely by using appropriate protocols and get them back to work. Because there's also a growing recognition that you could have a cure that's worse than the disease, because there are massive implications of a prolonged recession that could turn into a depression, including, of course, you know, health consequences. So what we're starting to talk to people about is, if phase one is this health crisis and about flattening the curve, which, and I'm sure you saw the data today, Newell, it looks like, knock on wood, we might be beginning to have some impact here in New Orleans and Jefferson, then the next phase is getting back to work in the new normal, which is about having the right protocols to keep people safe, but begin to allow the heart of the economy to begin to pump on its own again. Because, you know, the government can only inject $2 trillion so many times before we end up, you know, in a whole nother kind of problem, right? So getting back to work in the new normal is going to have to be a theme that we start exploring increasingly over the coming weeks.
Michael, the mayor yesterday said that they're anticipating a $100 million deficit in the city budget, which I think is somewhere around $600 to $700 million.
Yep.
And that there's a little bit of uncertainty in some of this aid that's coming down. I know that there are some dollars that will flow to the state, and then how much of that is going to go to the locals is yet to be determined. But obviously the number that's coming is not going to be enough, not by any stretch of the imagination. Where do they go next? I mean, obviously the contemplation of furloughing employees and also trying to maintain critical essential services is going to be, I would imagine, in front of mind for them, and that's going to be a real delicate balance.
Yeah, this is going to be difficult. Right now, I think there are two main sources of funds coming down to the states and cities. There's a $150 billion state stabilization fund that's part of the CARE Act. It's going to state and local. It's allocated by population. I think we're supposed to get about $2 billion of that. And then inside the $454 billion credit facility with the Federal Reserve, that also is meant to be lent to states and municipalities. I'm just not sure exactly how that's going to work. But it's going to be a difficult situation for both the state and municipalities. At the state level, we're getting hit not just by the sales tax decrease, but also, of course, by oil. And to give you a sense of the impact of that for the state budget, a $1 drop in a barrel of oil is $12 million to the state budget, roughly. We've gone down from the 50s to below 20. So a huge impact on the state budget there. And then at the local level, what you have is you've got a city budget of, I think, between $750 and $800 million. I believe about $100 million of that is provided by hospitality, which has effectively been shut down right now. And so I think the practical and political trick that we're going to have to try to work through going forward is there are going to be cutbacks. What we would argue is let's make those cutbacks the way we would do it if we were running our business, by trying to cut into the bone as little as possible, maintain core services as much as possible, and try to be subjective and strategic about what we cut versus what we run. So I would give you an example, and I'd be surprised if you disagree with me. We wouldn't want to cut support for NOPD and public safety. We made some of those mistakes following Katrina, and I think we're still trying to work our way through that. Yeah. So we hope that we don't do the politically easy thing, which is just to do cuts across the board and say everybody suffers, because although that's easier to do, that's not going to yield the, how should I say it, the least bad result.
Right. So going back to what you said of how you would run your private business, you wouldn't wait till working capital is gone to make these decisions. There needs to be some preservation of working capital in the short term, because you don't know when this aid and how efficient the delivery of this aid is going to be. Obviously, the priority is local businesses, individual taxpayers first, big business then falls second or third, government falls some way down the list, and appropriately so. But the fact of the matter is, these are decisions, if you already know you're going to have a $100 million impairment, it would seem to me that you would be making this situation now. You'd bring it to the forefront now before you actually physically run out of money.
No, and what I can tell you, so that is correct. And yeah, at the local level, for example, they're going to get hit not just by the reduction in sales tax, which is going to be pretty acute, but also by the 3 months deferment in people actually paying it. Businesses paying it, so it's a double whammy. Here, what I do know, without saying what I can't on air, I do know that folks inside City Hall are already working on this in a preemptive way. It's obviously very top of mind, and they're trying to be very, very proactive and smart about it and look at all the options.
So, I mean, in talking to, I know you've been engaging with the banking community. What is their confidence level of the underwriting that's going to go along with this? I know you said that this is supposed to be a light process. That's typically, as I'm reading through a number of stories right now, everybody's really kind of almost, now that the bill's passed, focusing on risk.
And that's right.
When the communication starts to transfer to that topic right away, I grow concerned, because that means hurdles are going to be placed out in front of not only the lenders, but, the borrowers, and it's going to be hard to access this money. Hopefully not. I hope I'm wrong, but my experience tells me that once they start talking about that big R word, risk, one syllable, it kind of blocks things and clogs it up.
Yeah, well, this ain't your first rodeo, right? Just a different bull.
Yours either.
No, I've been going to this gig back since my restaurant went through the .com crash of 2001 back in San Francisco. I got physical memory and significant PTSD from it. But look, you're right about that. And so let me make a comment and then kind of put a couple of specific points on it. There are a couple of places where trust has to, or maybe the comment is this. The intention of this program is that any bank or CDFI that wants to participate is going to be able to participate. So the good news is that that's going to bring in a wide range of banks and financial organizations that don't typically work with the SBA. The flip side of that is that it's going to be those banks that already have a relationship with the SBA because they're SBA lenders, or even more so because they're what's called a preferred SBA lender. Those are the ones that are going to have a higher degree of confidence about how to work with the SBA in a way that minimizes that risk, right? So the broadening of the relationships is going to mean that people are going to have to learn that, or banks are going to have to learn that for the first time. There are a couple of places where I think the risk is going to come in. And this might be a little bit technical, but we'll get into it. The first is that the SBA is meant to be backing up the banks 100%. The banks are lending their own money. They're lending their own capital. They're using their own balance sheet. But the SBA is guaranteeing it 100%. And so for this reason, the banks should have very light underwriting in theory. But the banks have to believe that the SBA guarantee is going to be there in case of a default. And then the second thing is that the forgivable portion, which is 8 weeks, that's going to be money that the bank is basically going to turn into a grant. Banks, their business model is not based on making grants. So they've got to believe that the SBA, the feds, are going to reimburse them for that amount. So there are a couple of trust points here that are critical. And if the trust is there and people follow through at all levels, it should be fine. But you're not wrong that there's some potential weak points in the chain that we have to watch.
One of my other concerns, and you tell me whether or not I'm all wet and beat up on me on this one. Nancy Pelosi's talking about the next package. Is there a danger strategically of coming with one so quick on the heels of this, and this one's not even implemented yet?
I think that there's a danger, yeah, politically in that, because the way it feels is that these first three phases were done out of necessity. They were urgent for the well-being of the country. They were done almost on a war footing. And so even though there was horse trading and there was pork put in and there was wrangling, essentially, you know, a bipartisan bill got passed for the good of the country. I do think that there's going to be need for follow-on phases, probably more than one. Just for example, the Paycheck Protection Program at $350 billion, you can do the math pretty easily and realize that if it has
what they're telling me.
Yeah, if you do broad uptake, you're going to need a couple more hits of the same money to meet all the demand, and it's hard to believe people are going to be left out in the cold. But when you have a phase four coming so quickly after a phase three, you start to wonder whether it's going to become more of a partisan bill with more specific priorities that are important to the different parties, and then it's going to look more like, you know, business as usual, and it's going to get bogged down. And so I think it's good for us to start talking about what needs to be in a next bill. There's been talk about, for example, CDBG block grants to provide marketing for hospitality like we did after Katrina. But I think that we want to watch the pacing up in D.C. Because if it doesn't have the context of urgency and what's truly best for the country in this existential way, yeah, then it could become just kind of politics as usual. And that's not good for anybody.
And, you know, one of the reasons I say that is that obviously we're ramping stuff up and PPEs, personal protection equipment, vaccines, testing, this and that. And once you get all of that rocking and rolling, it's hard to stop it. And so they're already having, you know, articles written about the fact that we're not going to have a problem with the next pandemic, because we may already have, in many respects, in the supply chain right now today, the requisite amount to have in that stockpile for the next pandemic we may need to deal with. Because once you get that supply chain going, it's hard to figure out when you say, okay, enough, right?
No, that's true. And, you know, you're probably going to see some places where the supply chain come together where, like, you know, some of the liquor companies that are making hand sanitizer now just start, you know, marketing it as, like, you know, as an alcoholic beverage, you know, just mix it, you know, like, right? You know, it could be a whole new meeting of a clean, refreshing drink. But no, look,
that's part of that flexing program y'all have over there, right?
Yeah. You know, I think that one silver lining in this is that we are going to come out of this much better prepared for the next pandemic, which will happen from a supply chain standpoint, from a medical response standpoint, from a hospital capacity standpoint. I mean, one of the moves around the globe has been to streamline healthcare and reduce beds. And I think now we're seeing, just like with drainage, where you need to build in some flex for the 100-year event, we need the same thing in healthcare. And so to the degree that, you know, you just have to wonder and worry that the next time it comes around, it could be even more virulent than what we're seeing with, you know, COVID-19, then I think you feel like, man, maybe we've gotten a chance to, you know, maybe this is a global warming. I mean, warning, excuse me, Freudian slip. a global warning. And we have a chance now to make sure our supply chains for everything from, you know, sanitizers to ventilators to ICU capacity are better set up for the next event. And I'd be, you know, I think that if there are the phases of this, Newell, the first phase is a health crisis. It's about flattening the curve. Programs like the CARES Act are about providing the liquidity to get to the second phase, which is about getting America back to work in the new normal with new protocols and procedures. Then the third phase, once we're kind of through the virus, is going to be evaluating our policies on everything from healthcare to our supply chain and talk about how do we do it differently. Like, I was talking to a guy at a major enterprise software company, and what he said to me is after this, they're going to think very hard about outsourcing to places like India, because the problem is that when they're working in America, if people have to work from home, everybody can work from home, and they kind of continue pretty well. But all their people working in Bangalore don't actually have the infrastructure or the ability to work from home. So they're finding that whether it's your manufacturing in China or your tech work in India, that there are fragilities to outsourcing, and I think that'll be addressed. So this third phase, and we're not nearly close enough to get to talk about it yet, but it's going to be about reevaluating, you know, having had this experience.
Absolutely. Great observations as always, Michael Heck. I know you got to get on a conference call. I appreciate you joining us this morning. Always really interesting perspectives, and stay safe, my friend, and stay well, and keep up the great work at GNO Inc.
Thank you. You too. We'll stay in touch, and you know, good to ride with you.
All righty. We'll be right back after the break. 260-1870 or text 870-870. This is Newell on WWL.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.